besides just equipment and goods from other countries. We're trying to find out specifically more about the ammunitions and weapon systems that they're shipping here.
In Israel, like the U.S., the largest export is weapons, so it's not surprising that these Zim ships are carrying weapons. Do you have any indication that these weapons are used by law enforcement? There's been a lot of talk in the media lately about the militarization of law enforcement, particularly in black and brown communities in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, we're left to wonder because Israel's biggest export is their experience. They actually train the IDF there, the Israeli Defense Forces, trains U.S. police here. And those same tactics, Israel has unique capabilities with crowd control and oppressing resistance and uprising mobilizations. They have like 300-plus homeland security programs. They're exporting all of that experience and all of that knowledge. So they play a major, major role in repression all over the globe. So, I mean, we're left to wonder, the ammunitions that are coming in and the ramping up of the militarization of the police here and the terrorizing of people, you know, Ferguson and in every city. You see these stories every single day coming out. We're left to wonder, I don't have any solid evidence of what guns these bullets are ending up in. You know, we're left to wonder what is happening with them. You know, I mean, it's fairly clear to me, but I don't have any solid evidence of where these munitions are specifically ending up.
Here in the West Coast, as we've seen the effectiveness of the Oakland block the boat actions, that boat was most recently rerouted and unable to unload at all in the port of Oakland. Some have mentioned the possibility that some of these Zim ships would possibly be rerouted to Portland. There are none scheduled to come into the port of Portland as it stands. What would you suggest to our listeners who are interested in organizing if such a possibility happened here in Portland?
For us in Tampa, we've gotten so much support and assistance from mobilizations in Oakland and LA and Vancouver, Seattle. We've gotten a lot of help, and we'd be willing to help also other port cities. This is, trust me, the last thing that Israel or Zim Shipping Line wants. The slightest thing can cause these customers, their global customer base, to go with another shipping company. They don't hold any you know, special relationship with Zim. They want their shipments to get in, and they want them to get in on time. If there is a campaign where every port city in this country where Zim ships are floating up to has a mobilization ready to confront them when they dock there, it's going to cause a huge quaking with their customer base. If we start contacting their customers and telling them, if it's all the same with you, go with another shipping company, because this shipping company is going to be the target of an enduring campaign to delay them at all costs, you know, then we can really do something. For anybody that's complained about police brutality, you know, the occupation of the people in Palestine, the way that Palestinians living in what is historic Palestine, what's called Israel, are living under over 20 apartheid laws, for the unjust things that keep happening, these genocidal offensives, the massacre of thousands of Palestinian children, women, and men, this is our chance. I can't stress enough to actually have a huge effect in this fight to stop it. In this country, our government is sending $3 billion a year to this government, and we're funding what's happening there. We need to take this chance to show resistance to that. So if anybody in any port city where Zim ship is coming in, this is Savannah, Mobile, New Orleans, Philly, New York, Boston, all of these places, reach out to someone from a Block the Boat campaign anywhere. That's what we did, and we got so much support and so much assistance, and we'd be willing to give the same and help in any and every way possible to get the groundwork going to create mobilizations. And it's very easy. If you have empathy and support and a dislike for injustice, that's pretty much all you need. The rest, you just come, you know, and we'll be happy to help.
Well, thank you so much. Again, I've been speaking with Desiree Lynn. She is a Tampa, Florida activist that locked down this weekend and was arrested as part of a Block the Boat campaign to try and stop the Zim Shipping Line, Israel's largest shipping company, from docking in Tampa. Well, thank you so much, Desiree Lynn, for joining us on KBOO today.
Thank you.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News In Depth.
In addition to being weird, Portland is becoming known in the tech industry as a city that fosters innovation. Many people working in the industry believe that new technology can solve problems, including social and environmental problems. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for Disruptive Technologies and Human Design, Part 4 of Startup City, How the New Tech Boom is Changing Portland.
The time is 6.05 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on KBOO, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Tonight, our focus on the eve of the election will be on a City of Portland ordinance for the November 2014 election called A Fair Chance for All. Most of you might know it as Ban the Box. Ban the Box is a campaign that began in Hawaii in 1999. Currently, 52 municipalities in 10 states have adopted policies, ordinances, and legislation that ban the box for government job applications. Tonight, our guests, and we have two of them, the first is, her name is Midge Purcell. She is the Director of Advocacy and Public Policy for the Urban League of Portland, and Mr. Ken Allen, who is the Executive Director of Oregon AFSCME. Thank you both for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, Midge. So why don't you tell our listeners about the significance of this ordinance.
Right. Okay. And first of all, I should say that it's not an ordinance that voters will get to vote on. However, like most city ordinances, it is an ordinance that people can come out and testify once it comes before city council. And we hope that it will become before city council before the end of this year and tell their stories. And this is important because, you know, we live in a society where thousands of people with convictions are released from prison and back into society every year. And we know from experience that they often can't find work and they often have a difficult time finding housing. And we feel that this is a path to people reoffending. It's a no-brainer. If you can't find a job to support your family, and if you can't find stable housing, you're more likely to go back into the behavior that got you into prison in the first place. So this ordinance will give people, it's called Fair Chance for All, because we feel that it will give people a fair chance to get their foot in the door and to talk about the skills and qualifications that they have to bring into employment, and also gives them an opportunity to say why they would be a good tenant and a good neighbor. And just in a nutshell, what it does is that it removes the box on an application for employment and housing that ask whether you've had previous arrest or conviction records. That is the box that we would like to ban or remove from applications. It doesn't mean that employers cannot or potential employers or landlords cannot ask about previous convictions somewhere in the process. It means that you cannot ask on an application form. And it will do, as I said, give people an opportunity to get their foot in the door.
So it sounds like this is kind of a gateway for the applicant to be able to strut their stuff.
Yeah, that's a very good way. That's a very good way of putting it. And you know, and if it does come to a situation where an employer needs to know, and that's actually enshrined in the ordinance, is that an employer can use his judgment to say whether a previous arrest or conviction is related to the job. But if they decide that it's related to the job, the applicant will have an opportunity to say, well, yes, I offended when I was 18. I'm 38 now, and I haven't offended in 20 years. Or, yes, I did something stupid when I was a teenager, and it's now on my record, but I have all of these things that I can offer to you as an employer.
Okay. So early in our conversation, we were talking about how this issue of ban the box or for a chance for all, how that came up. How is it that the Urban League engaged in this process?
Well, we're an organization that likes to listen to our community. And it's clear that the issue of employment, African-American unemployment, the Urban League, let me just take a step backwards, is an organization that has served the African-American community for the last 70 years. So we like to listen to our community, and they said in no uncertain terms that the fact that unemployment is a key issue. There's 18% adult unemployment in the African American community, and 40% when you look at unemployment for young people. And so there are also structural barriers that perpetuate high levels of unemployment, even when the economy gets better. I mean, we just heard yesterday that Oregon unemployment has dipped below 6% for the first time. But I bet if we look at the numbers for African Americans, it's probably double, if not more, okay, that level.
So it's my impression that in order to gain passage of this ordinance, that you have been working with other organizations. I think there are about 49 organizations, some of which are labor unions, that are assisting in this process. Is that a fair statement?
That's an absolutely fair statement. You know, we have had amazing partners on this issue, and I'll let one of them speak in a moment. But we have been particularly gratified that labor has stepped up and taken some ownership and leadership of this campaign. You know, your union, AFSCME, has been a very essential partner in this, as has the AFL-CIO, amongst SEIU, amongst other unions. And I'll let Ken talk about why labor has embraced this issue, but embraced it they have, and we are really just really pleased and proud to be working with the labor movement on this issue.
Okay, Brother Allen, you want to go ahead and expand on that?
Well, I think that the name is what it's all about, a fair chance for all. And that's what we in the labor movement are all about, providing a fair chance. You know, at AFSCME, we represent about 90% of the state correction system. And we know that in order to reduce recidivism, helping inmates that come out of the system get a job is the most critical ingredient. And if there's a box that they have to check that says that they had a conviction or arrest, most of the time, there's tons of employers that are just going to throw those applications away. It's not a fair chance for all. You know, when we discussed this before we supported, we said, let's be honest. There's probably 10 to 15% of our members that have been arrested for something in their past. When you're a teenager or some other time, there's been an arrest, and you don't want to carry that around with you for the rest of your life. We're supposed to be a society that believes that people can redeem themselves and get over certain bad things. And so this is really what that's about. And, you know, we embraced it. The Oregon AFL-CIO has embraced it as a key ingredient in trying to make life better for all Oregonians.
Now, it's my impression that when a person gets out of prison, there's a potential for them to find a job. But this measure, this ordinance, would not just allow them to find a job, but will help them find a living wage job. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, what we're trying to get at here is that people have a chance to get beyond that first step, that they have a chance to get to the interview process. And, they can explain to the employer if there's anything in their background that they've had the chance to redeem and fix. Inmates that are coming out of the system, they're given a small amount of money and sometimes a bus ticket, and that's it. And the key to reducing recidivism is that first decent job. In the Department of Corrections, we spend a lot of time and effort with inmate work programs, trying to give inmates good work history, teaching them some job skills. But you can teach all the job skills possible. If they come out and they can't get through that to the interview process, it doesn't help them. So this is a key thing in Oregon to reducing the amount of money that we spend on corrections and to reducing recidivism.
Yeah, I think the one thing that will aid in people getting living wage jobs is that it does, as you said, it really opens up the pool. This ordinance covers all employers or the majority employers. Like most ordinances, it may not cover a family business or less than five, but it'll cover the majority of employers, so it will allow people to compete on a much more even playing field for those jobs that are living wage jobs. We as a state and as a labor movement and a social justice movement have a lot more to do generally to make sure that everyone has access to living wage employment. But by opening it up to all employers, we are saying that you can compete for not just basic minimum wage, low wage jobs, but for good paying jobs.
Okay. For our listeners that have just joined us, I want to let you know you are listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on KABU, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. And so our guest tonight is Mr. Purcell from the Urban League and Ken Allen from the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees. And so, again, we're having this discussion about an ordinance. Now, Midge, earlier we talked about, you said that it was not something that people can vote on. So can you give me a little more idea of exactly what the process is?
Sure. Much policy that's passed in the city, it is determined by our city councilors, and so we have had long discussions with all of our city councilors and the mayor, and we believe that they are generally supportive. Obviously, the devil is in the detail, and we're looking at the language of the ordinance right now. But I think that with any policy, I think we have to demonstrate that it is that there are there's deep strength of feeling in the community about this issue. So while it's not something that people voted on, we have been conducting a signature campaign for the last 4 months. And we have, with the support of our partners, collected over 6,000 signatures of people who support this campaign. We've spoken to people on the doorstep, at bus stops, at MAC stops at events over the summer. And whenever we talk about this, we've generated quite a lot of support. And we also will be, once we pass this in the city, we hope to take it to the state legislature.
So this is just the beginning.
Yes, this is just the beginning.
So when I was talking to you both earlier, we talked about the potential of a 2015 legislation in 2015 that would expand on this process. Is that a...
So, you know, we're going to support the efforts of the Urban League and coalition partners at the 2015 legislature to put this in place on a statewide basis. You know, when you think about it, any time that you allow discrimination to rear its ugly head, those that are discriminated against oftentimes are some of the most talented people, and it's a loss for our society. I've been in the furniture factories in the corrections institutions. I've been in the metal shops where workers are trained in metalworking skills. I've seen artists in the Department of Corrections. There's a tremendous amount of talent among these inmates. And if we don't allow them to come out and get a decent job where they can show that talent, our society is at a loss. We're losing talent that is there for employers and the rest of us to benefit from.
Okay. So, Midge, I get the impression that some of that legwork seems like this is this campaign is like on two planes. You're working with the city of Portland, but you're also having conversations with, I guess we'll call them candidates, given that everybody's up for
right.
re-election.
Right. Well, we have been having conversations with state legislators, some of which are running and some not. But we feel that this would benefit our state as a whole, and I think Ken just eloquently described why. People who are barred from employment, people who are barred from contributing to society, it's a loss to the it's a loss to all of us. It's a loss to the state. And if we are going to be competitive as a state, that we need to employ all the human capital that we have. And, you know, it reminds me of the old ad for the National Negro College Fund. It said, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And I think that we are wasting so many minds and creative people that can actually boost our economy and innovation in our state.
So if someone wanted to get involved in this process, how would they do that?
Well, I would urge people to go on our website, the Fair Chance for All website, and look at how you can get involved. We're still collecting endorsements from organizations. So if you belong to an organization that would consider endorsing this, we urge you to download the endorsement form and send it in. Also, we have petitions on that website. And so if your organization can get signatures on the petition, we are going to be collecting signatures up until the time we have testimony at City Hall. So the more signatures we get, the more it shows the depth of feeling in the community. So those are two ways that they can get involved. And if you have someone who's been impacted, get in touch with us. We need stories. We need people to tell their stories. When that's happened, it's been absolutely heart-wrenching. People who have done everything right, everything, when they've gotten out of prison and they still can't get a job or they still can't find stable housing, it's absolutely heart-wrenching. And these are the stories that our politicians and our policymakers need to hear.
Okay.
I think there's a message for employers, too, because you know, I served on the board of directors for the work programs in the state, and you know, the inmates that are in these work programs, they learn good work habits. They're held up to a pretty high standard in the institutions. If they foul up, they know they're yanked out of their job in the metal shop or the wood furniture factory. There's a shortage coming down the pipeline in Oregon for people that know how to work with metal. There's not that many high schools that have metal working programs anymore. But there's talented inmates that have been working in those metal shops for years that when they come out, they'd make a good employee for some of these employers. So employers ought to broaden their horizons and think about the kind of talent that's out there and available.
Yeah. Well, this is really exciting, being able to look at how labor's connecting with the community and working forward into broadening our base, our worker base, because right now it's a bit constricted. We work on issues regarding minimum wage, and so I'm very excited to see this collaboration taking place.
Yes.
So you've had conversations with the mayor, City of Portland. Have you worked with any other cities in regards to the effort to ban the box in Oregon?
We have had really good support and advice from a national organization, National Employment Law Project, who has supported these campaigns all over the country. And we've also taken the best from the best in terms of drafting our own ordinance. And, you know, we've taken language and concepts from Seattle, from Philadelphia, from Newark, New Jersey, all of whom have really strong, robust ordinances. So we hope that we will be as successful as they are in terms of passing something that's meaningful and that will really make a difference to the lives of people who have had previous arrests and convictions.
Didn't the mayor already decide that the city would take the box off their employment applications?
Yes.
I thought I heard that. So the politicians, like at the mayor's level, they can take executive action themselves. The ordinance will apply to most employers, but a public employer could do this by an executive action.
Right, and that's exactly what they've done.
And commend the mayor for doing that.
Yes, absolutely. I was in a meeting, actually, very apropos, the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Civil Rights Act today, and Mayor Hales also, in his remarks, said that they were committed to ban the box. So I think that we're very, very confident that we're going to be successful with this in the city and hopefully build that momentum to take it statewide. And also, I mean, just to piggyback off what you said earlier about labor and community groups working together. I've been a trade unionist all my working life, and I think that most African Americans in particular have had a higher proportion of union membership than a lot of other groups. Mm-hmm. Historically, they have. Mm-hmm. I think that deindustrialization has really put a dent in that, because a lot of Black workers worked in manufacturing and industry, where they would invariably be members of trade unions. And so I think trade unions have a history of being concerned about issues that impact communities of color and have had good relations. I think that have been over the last decade or so. Some of those relationships haven't been as strong because of mass unemployment. So I think that these relationships that are reestablishing themselves are really positive, and I think that there's a firm foundation for them.
And I would agree.
Yeah, I think that's really true. The number of unions that are looking to work with community groups, and you know, our policy at AFSCME is that our work with community groups is not a one-way street. We're seeing what we can do to help the community groups with their issues. We're not just asking for what community groups can do to help us. In fact, we want to be on the helping end right now. So minimum wage, paid sick days, fair mm-hmm. chance for all. These are all issues that are really important to all workers, not just those with trade unions. So mm-hmm. that's where we're going to be putting a great deal of our efforts.
So Midge, do you have some final words regarding the Fair Chance for All?
Well, I think that it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to really do something that will be effective for, unfortunately, a growing number of people who have had engagement with the criminal justice system. And I think that it's important to know that if we do this, as Ken said, it's for all of us. I think that it strengthens us as a community. It strengthens us as a society to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to contribute. And also has an opportunity to earn a living so they can support their families and support the communities in which they live. Mass incarceration has had a huge impact on the economic viability of African American communities in particular. And I think that this is another thing that, you know, we hope to address by giving people an opportunity to earn, to build stable communities, and to contribute to the neighborhoods in which they live.
And Brother Allen?
I just think we need to think big picture about the positive impact this can have on the ability for an offender to come out and get a decent job, to take care of their family, to develop a great relationship with their children and turn their lives around. And that's what we should be trying to do, is help people to turn their lives around and not reoffend. I'd rather have somebody come out and live next to me that got a good job, a good paying job, than somebody that hasn't been helped whatsoever.